It's that time. Lock and load. The Michael Berry Show is on the air.
You know you make me wanna kick my heels up and throw my hands up and throw my hands back and come on now, someone get to say you.
Mr. Dorfman.
Hello.
0.2. Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
Hey, come on, flounder. Can't spend your whole life worrying about your mistakes. You f***ed up. You trusted us.
On this day in 1978, National Lampoon's Animal House was released. Written by the great Harold Ramis, Douglas Kinney, and Chris Miller. Directed by John Landis. Starring John Belushi, Donald Sutherland, of others. Produced by Matty Simmons of National Lampoon and Ivan Reitman for Universal Pictures. Based largely on the experiences of Harold Ramis, Douglas Kinney, and Chris Miller at their universities. Ramis at Zeta Beta Tau fraternity at Washington University in St. Louis. Chris Miller's Alpha Delta Phi experiences at Dartmouth in New Hampshire. And Ivan Reitman's at McMaster University in Hamilton, Ontario. It was John Belushi's first screen credit. He was 28, already an established star because of Saturday Night Live. Included, of course, Kevin Bacon, which is how you get to so many of the 70s actors from Kevin Bacon.
Assume the position.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
And then we got calls.
Thank you, sir. May I have another? Thank you, sir. May I have another?
You know, just hearing those clips takes me back to such a good time. There's certain movies that for my age group, and I guess this is probably true of everyone, but they were starting to put on a little more edgy movies on network television. Porky's was probably the movie that, you know, my brother and I, my brother's 3.5 years older than me, but Porky's was the movie that, you know, we'd stay up, it was going to be on late. You want to watch a dirty movie. And it wasn't ever actually anything worth seeing, but boy, it would get so close, wouldn't it? All right, to the phone lines we go. Let's start with Toga, and then we'll just go down the list from there, rotate them after that, Ramon. Toga, you're on the Michael Berry Show. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to bring up some points about the discussion this morning. Your listeners... concerning Miss Biles, she and the teams have been there since, what, Friday, probably got into Tokyo Wednesday, got used to the terrain and everything, probably did some interviews and everything. So she was appearing to crack. I'm sure there were some signs prior to her performance. And I think it was a little shameful that some other alternates weren't available to go on because she took their spot. But I have to applaud the young lady that did was able to perform at the last minute. It's like the star is born, you know? The star, the understudy comes up, okay, you're on right now, you got to go, let's do it. And she performed, she did. Whether Ms. Biles would be on point or not, the American team did not do as well as the Russians. If you watch the performance at all, there was a on the floor mat, one of the gymnasts fell, another gymnast fell off the balance beam. But the Russians were good. But I have to hand it to the American. You know, the understudy, she came on point, she did it, and I have to applaud her for it. You don't hear people talking about that. They're just talking about Miss Simone. And I'm not an athlete. I know that I'm not even close to being one. So I know about... I don't know what it takes to become a top-notch world class. I admit that. And I hope whatever's going on with Miss Simone, she's able to, find help for it.
Right on. Jonathan, you're on the Michael Berry Show. Go ahead, Jonathan, you're up.
Yeah, so I don't think this has anything at all to do with her mental stability or anything like that. They changed the rules to the performance at the last minute last week. They announced that they weren't going to give her credit for the difficulty rating anymore. She did a full interview about it. Vox did a full write-up about it. At the last minute, they changed the scoring. They weren't going to give her full credit for her performances.
Right. Well, as I understand it, you noted it correctly, but let me restate that. And that is that one of the things that supposedly separated her from the field was that she would attempt maneuvers that no one else would even dare attempt, and that there was an extra scoring capacity because, like a bonus or an extra credit, because you're trying a more difficult maneuver, and that perhaps without that, she would have lost her edge.
Didn't change that, though, until after she got there. They didn't announce the change until after she got
right.
there.
Right. So is the answer to pull out of the competition?
I don't know that there is a right answer for that. I mean, would you compete in a game they changed the rules on you when you started playing?
Absolutely. Well, what's the alternative?
I mean, the alternative is to do what she did and go home, right? I would have competed.
Yeah.
But I'm not, I'm not a world class gymnast. But I would have competed. But I can see where she's doing death defying tricks out there, and she's got this thing laying on her head that, they changed the rules on me. That's a personal attack.
Yeah, thanks for the call. But it strikes me that we teach our kids and expect of ourselves that when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Why not execute the maneuver that you and only you can execute? It's named after you. Why not execute that and show the world and leave the world looking at the judges like, you bunch of clowns? She's clearly the best. It would have been a much better play to have been wronged, to have been scored lower than she should have been, and to have been wronged, and then the Russians win. And America says, you're our sweetheart. You gave it everything, and they cheated you. And then there would be this remiss that she was wronged, that she had done everything within her power. But to back out, you give them the opportunity to skate for what they've done. I'm not necessarily saying that this is comparable, but there is a really good 30 for 30 short. It's called Fields of Fear. It's about a catcher named Mackie Sasser. I watched it, maybe a year ago. He was a catcher for the New York Mets. And for those of you who play golf, you know what the yips are. And sometimes a player just, they lock up. Mackie Sasser got into some sort of Charlie Brown loop he couldn't get out of. He got to where he couldn't throw the ball back to the pitcher. But they wanted to keep him on the team so he would walk the ball back to the pitcher at one point because he could not release. It became this mental tick. I'm not saying that's what happened to her, but it made me think of that, and it's a good watch. Shootings in Chicago over the weekend. The mayor of Seattle is calling on the city to rebuild its depleted police force after six separate shootings rocked Washington State's largest metropolitan area over the weekend. Seattle's Mayor Jenny Durkan said at a Monday press conference, "As a city, we cannot continue on this current trajectory of losing police officers." Oh, Jenny, I thought it was the summer of fun. Donald Trump needed to lighten up. "I need more officers," Seattle's police chief Adrian Diaz said. adding that he can hire more, but he also needs support from the city, making it clear to officers, current and prospective, that they will have our support financially and otherwise to do this job well, and no, they will not be laid off due to budget cuts. Back to the Olympics. Full disclosure, I have not and will not watch. Full disclosure, I've been a big fan of Simone Biles in the past, the way she has competed, the way she has conducted herself. I don't know why she chose not to go out and compete, why she pulled out at the end. I know that the media has incessantly interviewed her afterwards. I know that a number of people have talked about how bold and brave it was. I also know that you are marked by your success, and that sometimes in that moment, the easy way out is to push back against the fact that you can't breathe. Or in the case of Carrie Strug, she said, according to Bella Caroli, "I can't feel my leg." Bella Caroli said, "You got to go one more time. Shake it out. Do I have to do this again?" she asked. "Can you? Can you?" She said, "I don't know yet. I will do it. I will. I will." And she did. Now, to put into perspective what Carrie Strug did, which to me is one of the all-time great Olympic moments. First, she needs a 9.49 or more for the American women to win gold. Here is her first attempt. When she lands unevenly and sprains her ankle. Go ahead.
If she can score 9.493 or better, then she will win the team gold for the USA. She's the last to go. She's the only one who can do it. Oh! Carrie is hurt.
She is obviously hurt. That's when she has the conversation with Bella Caroli. Then she comes back out, and what you cannot see, if you could, if you don't remember this moment, and even if you do, the 1996 Olympics, the moment of the 96 Olympics, there's no way she can land on that foot. It is destroyed. She lands on one foot, and she looks like Ralph Macchio in The Karate Kid doing the praying mantis. She's got the other leg hiked up. You talk about tough. She landed on one leg. She stuck it. That other foot is up in the air. She gets a 9.7-something, which is more than the 9.49 needed, which, granted, the rest of the team had already performed so well. They win gold. She is America's sweetheart. So after, play the full clip this time, and then what you're going to hear is, oh, Carrie is hurt. Then you're gonna hear her coming down. You're going to hear her flip, and then you're going to hear the amazing response to what she's just pulled off.
Carrie Strug, it is up to her. If she can score 9.493 or better, then she will win the team gold for the USA. She's the last to go. She's the only one who can do it. Oh! Carrie is hurt. A 9.712. She has done it. Carrie Strug has won the gold medal for the United States team.
You remember when Mac had her brought in on a gallery furniture chair? Oh, what a moment. Gosh, what a moment. Houston's pride. Unbelievable. Steve, on the black line, you're up, sir. Go ahead. Hello, Steve. You're up.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. Here's how yes, I see it. Simone was under an intense amount of pressure. And I'm not sure if this is her third or fourth time going. it was like that. She was like America's Nadia Comaneci, pressure number one. The scandal that came out about the pedophile creep, you know, that seduced all those girls, that it came out. So she didn't have to think about that previously until now. And it's just, in her mind, everybody knows what could have happened. And she stopped having fun. You got to have fun, you're going to be in any type of sport. When you lose having fun, then it becomes a job. It becomes a chore. And it was just too much weight on her. And I think it just kind of all came to a head when she did so poorly on that first rotation. She just said, okay, that's it. I'm done.
If you were her coach, what would you have told her?
I would have said, I totally understand. Now, well, her coach couldn't understand. Who could understand being sexually assaulted and then being under that much light, under that much attention, under that much, like I say, the whole thing, it was pressure for her to go. If I was her, I wouldn't have went. I would have left out a champion and would have let 2021 go. The COVID, let's not even think about that. This whole Olympic thing got delayed a whole year. So there's too many wrongs to make a right.
But it got delayed for all the athletes around the world.
All the athletes hadn't gotten sexually assaulted.
We don't know that.
True. Well, publicly, that your name was out there. And she's been
right.
A very avid spokesperson, you know, for that, everything. So if you had a dirty little secret and everybody found out about it, you're going to feel differently about yourself. You're going to feel, you know, kind of like, well, I didn't ask for this, so why did it happen?
Well, certainly the sexual scandals within that team, there should be some people hanged for that. And I suspect there are a lot of people within American Olympics who had to be aware of what was going on because it was so widespread. The Dr. Nasser, or whatever his name is, from Michigan, that was, you know, I just looked at the video and you see Carrie Strug being handed over to that bastard who was sexually assaulting so many of those. And of course, Simone Biles spoke out about that and lent her celebrity to, yes, this was what was going on. Stephen, thank you for the call, but I got to tell you, if I was that young lady's coach, I would have told her, if you want to pull out, I understand. That's your decision, and only you get to decide whether you go back out there. But you will regret for the rest of your life if you don't go back in and compete. That's what I was taught. That's what I teach my children. I don't think that all of life is war and the battlefield, but I do think that you have to understand that whatever impediment is in your way, whatever hurdle, whatever obstacle, whatever pain, you learn to push through it or you will regret it, because there will never be an opportunity like this again.
It's the Michael Berry Show. Michael Berry.
Talking about Simone Biles and the competition, I haven't watched the Olympics and I won't be, but I did want her to succeed. It's a fantastic story. There's a lot of texture to her story. there is the concept that some Americans feel let down that she did not compete when she was, by her own admission, the head star. There are plenty of people saying, well, she doesn't want to compete, she doesn't have to. And I suppose that's fine. But it's been suggested that we're almost celebrating her lack of competing when the times got tough. You know, up until COVID, I used to give a lot of speeches. And the speech money I make is our family travel money and the bonus money I pay to Ramon and Chad and Kenny. And so I used to give a fair number of speeches. I'd travel around and give those speeches. The speech business kind of dried up, at least for now, because it was always big trade associations and things like that. And people who know me were always very amused that before I would go on to give a speech, might be thousands of people, you're out on the stage by yourself, I'd go to the restroom. I don't want to make this TMI, but I'd go to the restroom until about 2 minutes before I had to go on stage because I get butterflies. I worry. What happens if you get up there and you don't have anything to say? What happens if you get up there and your brain locks up? What happens if you get up there and they're all talking and not listening and you're booked for a 45-minute speech and 5 minutes in, you just want to walk off the stage? A lot of people will tell you they have butterfly speaking in public. And I do it more than most people. And I get paid to do it. I feel like I'm pretty good. I've got years and years and years of experience. But I still get nervous before every single time. Then when I get out there, I'm in my elements, what I do. And I'm sure Simone Biles feels the same way. Some doubt crept into her head, maybe. I didn't see the interview the gentleman mentioned earlier. A doubt crept into her head, and she felt, she said at 24, I doubt myself more. I do believe there's something to be said for that. I do believe that this is a young man's game. That's what made Laura Wilkinson's case so amazing. She's 40 years old trying to make the Olympics. She's got kids at home. She's training with kids at home. And then this sweet little girl, Sunisa Lee, who stepped up when Simone Biles stepped down. That should have been her moment. And then instead she says, we do not owe anyone a gold medal. Sweetheart, shut your young, innocent, ill-informed, well-intentioned, full of half-baked quotes from Instagram mouth. Sweetheart, you have the chance to be America's darling. Mary Lou Retton, decades later, is a star. Carrie Strug is a star. These women who were girls when they won are heroes to little girls, the darlings of the nation. But the people around them are filling them with pablum. Little half-baked Instagram quotes, sassy this and sassy that. Just because the women around you are telling you this doesn't mean that's what the people at home who are rooting for you are believing. When the beer-swilling football fan sits in the stands on Sunday, 85 pounds overweight, C-team for the JV as a senior at his small school in Texas, and boos you for dropping the ball, it's not because he himself could have gone out on the field and run an 8-yard pattern, much less a fly. It's because he wants you to be better than him. He's rooting for the ideal. If you're just going to be normal, then you're not going to be celebrated. And when you tell people you eat Wheaties, nobody's going to eat Wheaties. people want you to be the legend. Remember Liberty Valance? When the legend is true, print the legend. People want the legend. They want a hero. They want someone to be bigger than life. They don't want you to be like them. Well, lots of people at home have mental health issues. Yeah. But we want to watch people who conquer them. Not people who lay up in bed eating Cheetos at 10 o'clock, crying into their Coca-Cola, wondering why they're still fat. We want you to be better. You're being projected onto the big screen for a reason. Children are going to dress up as you. Children are going to come out to see you. Look at this Disney on Ice. How long those... Christy Yamaguchi. For how long people came and watched her skate. Imagine if before a big competition. Imagine if Tom Brady, with a minute left, bringing his team back, said, you know, no. I feel sorry for her because she's going to regret this. Tom Brady. Drago punched Rocky real hard, and Rocky said, I need some time. I need to think about this. Of course it's a movie. Of course it's not true. But we are a culture that celebrates success. There's a cost to that. Absolutely. One of them is that not everyone will be able to rise to that. People will feel defeated. They'll feel sad. It strikes me there's a central question to all of this. Do we normalize failure? It's certainly easier when you fail if there's no bitter sting to it. But when you normalize failure, you reduce the success. Sometimes we succeed far beyond our own limitations out of fear of failure because it's so bitter. It's almost as if we are transforming from a masculine to a feminine society. There are differences between men and women. The fact that many people don't want to admit that doesn't undermine it. Men tend to want to compete to win, and they understand that in order to enjoy the victory, somebody has to suffer the defeat. But if everybody gets a trophy, nobody gets a trophy. I'll never forget. I'd been on a winning team. It's funny how luck plays out. My brother, Chris, I don't think he was ever on a winning team. And I was never not on a winning team. Just sheer luck. Wasn't because I was a great player. Just happened to be lucky on the teams I got on. 12-year-old baseball season. And I've won the championship on the team I've been on every year. We are playing for the championship. We're up 2-1. Bunt down the third baseline. Third baseman overthrows the second baseman who's covering first. There's two runners on and one out. They come around and... the inning continues, and they beat us 4-2. The season is over. At the end of the championship game every year, the commissioner of the league would come out, they'd have a box, and they'd hand you your trophies. And we, the Tigers, had lost to the Lions. And we stood on the first base line, and they on the third base line, and the commissioner called out their name and handed each one their trophy. And afterwards, he told us that we'd had a good season, and we should be very proud. And then everybody turned to start walking away. And I remember just being stunned because I had a trophy for every year I played because we won the championship every year I played. What was happening? Wait, what? And I remember asking my dad, don't we get a trophy? And I remember him saying, no, you didn't win. Ooh, that stung. But how can they, I mean, y'all are the adults. Why can't you give us a trophy? Because if everybody gets a trophy, nobody got a trophy. Are we normalizing not doing your best, not sacrificing? Is it a proper parallel to look at American politics today? Why should you have to work to get paid? Why shouldn't everyone get free health care and education and a basic income? Is that too far a stretch? Or is this exactly the mindset that we're teaching, and it's consistent across the board? Let's go to Holly. Holly, you're on the Michael Berry Show. Go ahead, dear.
Hi, yes. I am a former female athlete, played for almost 20 years, former female athletics coach. I'm the mom of two athletic little boys, and we have a daughter on the way. Generally speaking, I'm not in the practice of raking people across the coals. I have a lot of humanity and empathy for Simone Biles. I admire her for all she's done as a young woman and an athlete. But my grievance is more so with the response folks are having toward her quitting. And at the end of the day, no matter how you dress it up, that's what she did. She quit. She quit on her team, and she quit on her country. And that, nonetheless, it's the nation's response that's really kind of bothered me. Yesterday, as I scrolled through social media, not only was she being hailed as a hero and in some cases a martyr, but Carrie Strug was being continually used as her foil, emphasizing that the 96 gold gymnastics team was an example of toxicity. One post, which had tens of thousands of likes and shares, was a dad explaining that he showed his daughters the Biles interview after she quit, and then showed them the Carrie Strug vault clip with Bella Coralie saying, you can do it, and pushing her through. And he went on to explain to his daughters that Biles was the real hero. And all I could think was, no, sir, buckling under pressure is not the mark of success. Rising to the occasion, recognizing that, as Esther in the Bible was told, you were made for a time such as this. And following through, pushing yourself beyond what your mind or your heart thinks you can do, that is success. That is something worth showing our children, inspiring our nation. That is something we're striving toward. You know, Patton had a coach, and my dad used to always tell me that General Patton said, America loves a winner, and they won't tolerate a loser. And based on the responses that I saw over and over again yesterday, I could not help but think, wow, how far America has fallen.
Interesting. I love this. This is where talk radio is at its best. Trace, you're on the Michael Berry Show. What you got, Trace? Trace?
Yes, you had a guy that basically made it, an excuse about her leaving because of the rule change. But when you're the best, they tend to come after you, and you have a bullseye on you. But the thing that bothered me the most about him saying that he would take his toys and go home, like he said he would quit if they changed rules on him, that sums up the Republicans that are in power right now. They don't fight. They don't do anything. If the rules are changed, they don't fight. They don't step up. It irritated the snot out of me when he said that, because that was a typical response, I feel like, from the Republicans that get in the power.